have heard that three of the sisters are searching for one with the gift. I think it will be a while before they return with him, if at all. But when they return, and if they bring him, I will remind the prelate that you are next in line, and are ready for the task."
"Oh, thank you, sister, thank you."
"You are a fine young woman, Pasha. The Creator has truly shown the beauty of his work in you."
"Thank you, sister,"
she said without blushing. "Thank the Creator." "I will, sister. Sister, before the new one is brought in, could you teach me more about what the Creator has intended for me? Help me to understand?"
"If you wish."
"Oh, I do. I really do." She patted Pasha's cheek. "Of course, my dear, of course." She stood up straight. "Now, off to the mistress of the novices with you. I won't have soon-to-be sisters with nothing better to do than stare out windows."
"Yes, sister."
Pasha curtsied with a smile and rushed off down the hall. She stopped and turned.
"Sister, I am afraid I don't know your name."
"Go." Pasha flinched.
"Yes, sister."
She watched the swell of Pasha's hips sway as she walked quickly off down the hall, kicking the rolled edges of carpets back down as she went. The girl had exquisite ankles. Grown into a man. She collected her thoughts and started off again down the halls and stairs. As she descended, the wooden stairs changed to stone. The heat lessened, although not the stuffiness or the smell of the tied flats. The warm glow of lamps was replaced by the flickering shadows of widely spaced torches. The cowering palace staff diminished in number until she saw no one. She continued down to the lowest floors, below dusty storerooms, down below the servants' quarters and workshops. The torches became more widely spaced until there were no more. She ignited a ball of flame in her palm and held it up to see by as she continued on. When she reached the proper door, she sent the flame into a cold torch set in a bracket next to the doorway. The stone-walled room was small, an abandoned cellar of some sort, empty except for a moldy straw on the floor, a lit torch, and the two wizards. The smell was unpleasant, burning pitch and damp mold. At her entrance, the two stood, swaying slightly. Both wore the plain robes befitting their high rank. Each had a stupid half-grin on his face. They weren't cocky, she realized. They had been drinking, probably celebrating their last night in the Palace of the Prophets, their last night with the Sisters of the Light, their last night wearing the Radahan. The two men had been friends since they had been brought to the palace as boys, almost at the same time. Sam Weber was a plain man of average height, with curly light brown hair and a clean-shaven jaw that seemed too big for the rest of his soft face. Neville Ranson was slightly taller, with straight black hair cut short and smoothed neatly down. He wore a short, well-kept beard that was just beginning to show flecks of gray. His eyes were almost as dark as his hair. His features seemed all the more sharply formed, standing next to his soft friend. She had always thought he had grown into a handsome man. She had known him since he had come to the palace as a small boy. She had been a novice then, and he had been the one assigned to her, put in her care. Her final test before becoming a Sister of the Light. That had been a long time ago. Wizard Ranson swept his arm across his middle and gave a dramatic, although wobbly, bow. He came back up with a widening grin. His grin always made his face look boyish, despite his years and the beginnings of gray. "A good evening to you, sister." Hard as she could, she backhanded him across the face with her rod. She could feel his cheekbone break. He fell back to the floor with a cry. "I have told you before," she hissed through gritted teeth, "never to use my name when we are alone. Being drunk does not excuse the order." Wizard Weber stood stone still, his eyes wide, his face white, his grin gone. Ranson rolled over on the ground with his hands to his face, leaving blood on the straw. The color came back to Weber's face in a red rush. "How dare you do this? We have passed all the tests. We are wizards." She sent a cord of power into the Radahan. The impact threw him back against the wall, where the collar stuck to the stone like a nail to a magnet.
"Pass the tests!" she screamed. "Pass the tests! You have not passed my tests!"
She twisted on the pain until Weber was choking in agony.
"Is this how you address a sister? Is this the way you show respect?"
She snipped off the cord and he fell to the floor, giving a grunt when he hit. He pushed himself up on his knees with an effort.
"Forgive me, sister," he said in a pained, hoarse voice. "I beg you forgive our disrespect."
His eyes rose cautiously to meet her glare.
"It was only the drink speaking. Forgive us, please."
With her fists on her hips, she stood watching him. She pointed with the rod at the one rolling and moaning on the floor.
"Heal him. I don't have time for this nonsense. I have come to give you both your test, not to watch him whine and complain about a little slap."
Weber bent to his friend, rolling him gently over on his back.
"Neville, it's all right. I'll help you. Lie still."
He took the man's shaking hands away and replaced them with his own. He began talking and healing. She waited impatiently with her arms folded. It didn't take long. Weber was talented at healing. Weber helped his friend sit up, and with a handful of straw wiped the blood from the healed wound. Ransom pushed himself to his feet. His eyes flashed in anger, but he kept any speck of it out of his voice.
"Forgive me, sister. What is it you want?"
Weber came up beside him.
"Please, sister, we have done everything the sisters have asked. We are finished."
"Finished? Finished? I don't think so. Have you forgotten our talks? Have you forgotten what I told you? Did you think I would forget? Simply let the two of you dance out of here, free as birds? No man walks out of here without seeing me or one of mine. There is the matter of an oath."
The two glanced at each other, retreating a half step.
"If you will just let us go," Weber offered, "we will give you our oath."
She watched them a moment, her voice coming quietly at last.
"My oath? It is not an oath to me, boys. It is an oath to the Keeper. You know that."
They both paled a little.
"And the oath comes only after one of you has passed the test. Only one of you has to give the oath."
"One of us?"
Ransom asked. He swallowed.
"Only one of us has to give the oath, sister?"
"Why only one of us?"
"Because," she whispered, "the other will have no need to give an oath. He is going to die."
They both gave a little gasp and moved closer together.
"What is this test?"
Weber asked.
"Take off your robes and we will begin."
They glanced at each other. Ransom lifted his hand a little.
"Our robes, sister? Now, here?"
She looked to each.
"Don't be bashful, boys. I have seen you both swim naked in the lake since you were only this big."
She held her hand out just below her waist.
"But that was when we were boys," Weber complained. "Not since we have grown into men."
She glowered at them.
"Don't make me have to tell you again. The next time I will burn them off you."
They both flinched and began pulling their robes over their heads. She made a deliberate point of looking each up and down just to show them her displeasure with their argument. Each man's face turned red in the torchlight. With a flick of her wrist, she brought her knife to her hand. "Up against the wall, both of you." When they didn't move quickly enough, she used the collars to slam them against the wall. With a thin stream of power to each Radahan, she immobilized them against the stone. They were flattened against the wall and helpless to lift a finger.
"Please, sister," Ransom whispered, "don't kill us. We'll do anything, anything."
She looked over at him.
"Yes, you will. One of you anyway. But we haven't gotten to the oath yet. Now still your tongue, or I will do it for you."
As the two were held helpless, she moved to Weber first. Putting the knife tip against his upper chest, she drew it slowly down, carefully cutting through the skin and no more. Sweat poured from Weber's face as he gritted his teeth. His jowls shook. After she had made a cut, about a forearm long,
She went back to where she had begun and made another next to it. So the two cuts were about a finger's width apart. Small, high-pitched sounds escaped from the man's throat as she drew the knife along. The ends of the parallel lines drew together to a point. Small trickles of blood ran down his chest. She worked the knife point under the top, between the cuts, separating the skin from him, until there was a generous flap of it hanging down. She moved over to Ranson and made the same twin cuts, with a flap of skin hanging away at the top. Tears ran down his face with the sweat, but he said nothing. He knew better. When finished, she straightened and inspected her work. They looked the same. Good. She tucked the knife back up her sleeve. One of you two is going to have the Rodahan taken off tomorrow and be free to go. As far as the Sisters of the Light are concerned, anyway. Not as far as I, or more importantly, the Keeper, are concerned. It will be the beginning of your service to him. If you serve well, you will be rewarded when he is free of the veil. If you fail in your tasks, well, you wouldn't want to know what would happen to you if you should fail him.
Sister,
Ranson asked in a shaky voice.
Why, only one of us. We could both give the oath. We could both serve.
Weber's sudden glare shifted to his friend. He didn't like being spoken for. He always had been obstinate. The oath is a blood oath. One of you will have to pass my test to earn the privilege of taking it. The other is going to lose the gift tonight, lose his magic. Do you know how a wizard loses the gift? They both shook their heads. When they are skinned, the magic bleeds from them. She said it as if she were discussing peeling a pear. Bleeds away until it's all gone. Weber stared at her, his face gone white. Ranson closed his dark eyes and shook. At the same time, she wrapped the flap of skin on each man around her first fingers. I'm going to ask for a volunteer. This is just a little demonstration of what is in store for the one who volunteers. I don't want either of you to think dying is going to be the easy way out. She gave them a warm smile. You have my permission to scream, boys. I believe this is going to hurt. She yanked the strips of skin off their chests. She waited patiently for the screams to stop, and even a little while longer, while they sobbed. It was always good to let a lesson sink in.
Please, sister, we serve the Creator as the sisters have taught us,
Weber cried.
We serve the Creator, not the Keeper.
She regarded him coolly. Since you are so loyal to the Creator, Sam, I will give you first choice. Do you want to be the one to live or to die tonight?
Why him?
Ranson demanded.
Why does he get to choose first?
Keep your tongue still, Neville. You will speak when spoken to. She slid her gaze back to Weber. She lifted his chin with a finger. Well, Sam, who dies, you or your best friend? She folded her arms across her breasts. He looked up at her with hollow eyes. His skin was ashen. He didn't look over at his friend. His voice came in a flat whisper.
Me. Kill me. Let Neville live. I won't give an oath to the Keeper. I would rather die.
She looked back into his empty eyes a moment and then turned to Ranson. And what have you to say, Neville? Who lives? Who dies? You or your best friend in the world? Who gives the Keeper their oath? He glanced to Weber, who didn't look back. He licked his lips. His dark eyes came back to her.
You heard him. He chooses to die. If he wants to die, let him. I choose to live. I will give the Keeper my oath. Your soul.
He nodded slowly, his eyes flashing fierce determination.
My soul.
Well then, she smiled. It seems you two friends have come to an agreement. Everyone is happy. So be it. I am pleased, Neville, that it is to be you with us. You have made me proud.
Do I have to be here?
Ranson asked.
Do I have to see it?
See it? She raised an eyebrow. You have to do it. He swallowed,
but the hard look stayed in his eyes. She had always known it would be him. Oh, not that there hadn't been doubts, but she had known. She had taught him well. She had spent a great deal of time on him, bending him to her way.
"May I be granted one request?"
Weber whispered.
"May I have the collar off before I die?"
"So that you may make wizards life fire and take your own life before we have a chance to take it from you? Do you think I am stupid? A stupid, soft woman?"
She shook her head.
"Denied."
She released both Radahan from the wall. Weber sank to his knees, his head hanging. He was alone in the room, and knew it. Ranson stood and straightened his shoulders. He pointed at the bloody wound down his chest.
"What about this?"
She turned her gaze to Weber.
"Sam, stand up."
Weber stood, his eyes staying to the ground.
"Your good friend has an injury. Heal him."
Without a word, Weber finally turned and put his hands on Ranson's chest and began healing. Ranson stood tall, waiting for the pain to be taken away. She walked to the door and leaned her back against it, watching Weber do his work, his last work. When he finished, he didn't look at either her or Ranson, but went to the far wall and slid his back down it until he sat on the floor. He buried his head between his knees and folded his arms around them. The healed but still naked wizard strode up to her and stopped, waiting.
"What is it I am to do?"
She flicked her wrist, bringing the knife to her hand once more. She gave it a quick, sharp toss in the air, catching it by the blade. She held the handle out to him.
"You are to skin him.
Alive."
She pushed the handle against him until his hand came up and took it. Ranson's eyes left her steady gaze. He stared at the knife in his hand.
"Alive," he repeated.
She reached into a pocket and pulled out the small item she had brought, a pewter figure of a man on one knee holding a crystal over his head. His tiny bearded face was turned up to it in wonder. The crystal was slightly elongated, coming to faceted points. Inclusions floated, frozen inside, like a sky of constellations. She wiped the dust off it with the corner of her light cloak and held the small statue out to Ranson.
"This is magic, and a receptacle of magic. The crystal is called Quillian. It will absorb the magic as it bleeds from your friend after he is skinned. When, and only when, all his magic has bled into the Quillian, it will give off an orange glow. You will bring the crystal to me to prove you have done the job."
Ranson swallowed.
"Yes, sister. Before I leave tonight, you will give the oath."
She pushed the figure with the crystal toward him until he took it. "This will be your first task after giving the oath. Fail it, or fail any of the tasks to follow, and you will wish you could trade places with your friend. You will wish it for all eternity." He stood gripping the knife in one hand and the small figure in the other.
"Yes, sister."
He stole a quick glance over his shoulder at the man crouched on the floor against the wall. He lowered his voice.
"Sister, could you still his tongue? I don't know if I could bear him talking while I do it."
She raised an eyebrow.
"You have a knife, Neville. If his words bother you, cut out his tongue."
He swallowed and closed his eyes for a moment. They came open.
"What if he dies before the magic is all bled away? With the Quillian present, he will live as long as there is any significant trace of it in him. After it's all in the crystal, it will begin to glow. In that way, you will know it is finished. After that, I don't care what you do to him. If you want, you may finish him quickly."
"What if he tries to prevent what I do?"
He leaned a little closer.
"With his magic."
She smiled and gave a nod.
"That I will still with his collar. He will not be able to stop you. After he's dead, there will be no life force to hold the Radahan on him. It will open. Bring it with you and give it to me when you bring the crystal."
"And what about the body?"
She gave him a hard look.
"You know how to wield the subtractive. I have spent a good deal of time teaching you, as have others."
She darted a glance at Weber,
Use it. Get rid of the body with subtractive magic. Every last scrap of it. Every last drop of blood.
Ranson straightened a little and nodded.
All right. After you have finished here and before you come to me at dawn, there is one more task you will perform this night.
Ranson took a deep breath, letting it out slowly.
Another task? Must I do another task this night?
She smiled and patted his cheek.
This second task you will enjoy. It's a reward for doing a good job with the first. Serving the keeper well has its rewards, as you will find out. Failing him has its punishments, as I hope you never discover.
He looked suspicious.
And what is this second task? You know a novice named Pasha?
He let out a grunt. There isn't a man in the palace who doesn't know who Pasha Mays is.
And how well do these men know her?
Ranson shrugged.
She likes to give a kiss and a cuddle in a corner. Any more than a kiss and a cuddle?
I know a few men who have had their hand up her skirt. I've heard them talk about what fine legs she has, how they would give up the gift just to have those legs around them, but I don't think any have. Some of the men watch out for her, as if she were a defenseless kitten. One in particular, young Warren, keeps a watchful eye on her.
Warren is one of the men she likes to kiss and cuddle?
I don't think she would know him if he was standing in front of her. He chuckled softly. If he could even work up enough courage to take his nose out of the archives and look her in the face. He frowned.
So what is the task? When you are finished here, I want you to go to her room. Tell her how you are to be released tomorrow and that when you passed all your tests, the Creator came to you in a vision. Tell her that the Creator told you in this vision that you were to go to her and teach her how to use the glorious gift of her figure that he had given her, how she was meant to use this gift to please men, so that when the special task he has for her is revealed, she will be prepared. Tell her the Creator said it was to help her deal with her new one, as he would be the most difficult any novice has ever been given. Tell her the Creator revealed to you that he made this night hot so she would sweat between her breasts over her heart to awaken her to his wishes.
She gave him a smooth smile.
Then I want you to teach her how to please a man.
He stared incredulously at her.
What makes you think she will believe any of this or go along?
Her smile widened.
You tell her what I told you to tell her, Neville. And you will have a great deal more than your hand up her skirt. She will probably have her legs around you before you finish talking.
He nodded dumbly.
All right.
She glanced deliberately down at him.
I'm glad to see that you are up to the task.
She looked back to his eyes.
Teach her everything you can think of to please a man. At least everything you can teach her by dawn. Teach her well. I want her to know how to make a man happy and keep him coming back for more.
He smiled.
Yes, sister.
She put the tip of the rod under his chin, lifting it a little.
You be gentle with her, Neville. I don't want you to hurt her in any way. I want this to be a very pleasant experience for her. I want her to enjoy it.
She looked down at him again.
Well, do the best you can with what you have.
I've never had any complaints. He snapped.
Idiot! Women don't complain to men's faces about that. They complain to the backs of their heads. Don't you dare jump on her, please yourself, and then fall asleep. You have until dawn. I don't want you sleeping tonight. You make sure this is an experience she remembers fondly. You teach her well. Everything you know.
She pushed up with the rod a little more.
This may be a pleasant task. But it is a task for the keeper just the same. Fail in this, as in any other, and your service will end abruptly. But your pain will go on and on. Keep alert when you are with her. In the morning, I expect a detailed report of everything you have taught her. You will report every bit of it. I need to know what she knows so I may guide her.
Yes, sister.
She glanced past him to the man against the wall. The sooner you finish here, the sooner you can be with Pasha, and the more time you will have to teach her.
He nodded with a grin.
Yes, sister.
She took the rod away and let out a breath. With a gesture, she made his robe float to her hand. She shoved it at him.
Put this on. You're embarrassing yourself.
She watched as he began gathering the material and pulling it over his head.
Tomorrow, the real work, the real task, begins.
His head poked through the robe, his arms following one at a time.
What work? What task?
After you are released, you must be off at once, in the service of your homeland.
You do remember your homeland, don't you?
You are going to go to Adendril as an advisor to High Prince Fyron.
You have things to do there, important things.
Like what?
We will talk about it in the morning.
But now, before you can do the first task, and the second, and the rest of it, you have an oath to give. Is this of your free will, Neville? She watched his eyes. They darted briefly to his friend huddled against the wall. Then he turned to glance at the knife and the quillion. She saw his dark eyes go out of focus, and she knew he was thinking about Pasha. He answered her in a whisper.
Yes, sister.
She nodded.
Very good, Neville. Kneel. The time of the oath is upon you.
As he went to his knees, she lifted her hand. The flame of the torch puffed out, plunging the room into total blackness.
The oath to the Keeper, she whispered, is given in the darkness that is his homeland.
Chapter 14. Gently, Kaelin pulled the door open. He was awake and sitting in front of the fire. When the door closed, it shut out some of the eerie sound of the boldos and the drums coming from the center of the village. She stood next to him and tipped his head against her leg, and then combed her fingers through his hair.
How is your headache?
It's all right. The rest and that last drink Nissel gave me helped. He didn't look up. They want me out there, don't they?
Kaelin sank down to sit on the ground next to him.
Yes, it is time.
She rubbed his shoulder. Are you sure you want to eat the meat, knowing this time what it is?
I have to.
But it's still meat. Will you be able to eat it?
If I want a gathering, I have to eat it.
The way is the way. I will eat it.
Richard, I'm worried about this gathering. I'm not so sure you should go through with it. Maybe there's another way. The Birdman is afraid for you, too. Maybe you shouldn't do it.
I have to.
Why?
He stared into the fire. Because this is all my fault. I am responsible. It is my fault the veil is torn. That's what Shota said. My fault. I caused it.
Darken Rall caused it. Somehow.
And I am a Rall, he whispered.
Kaelin glanced over, but he didn't look back. The crimes of the father passed on to the son? He smiled a small smile. I don't believe that old line, but maybe there is a little snip of truth to it. His eyes turned to her. You remember what Shota said? That only I could restore the veil? Maybe because Darken Rall tore it through the magic of Ordin and my intervention, I have to restore it. She watched the firelight flicker in his eyes.
So you think, what?
That maybe since a Rall tore it, it takes a Rall to close it? He shrugged. Maybe. That could explain why only I can close it. It may not be the reason, but it's the only one I can think of. He smiled. I'm glad I'm marrying a smart woman. She grinned. It made her happy to see him smile.
Well, this smart woman can't see how that could be the reason.
It might not be, but it's a possibility I have to consider.
Then why do you have to go through with this gathering?
His eyes lit up with excitement as he gave her a boyish grin. Because I figured it out. I figured out what we're going to do. He rearranged himself, turning toward her and folding his legs. Tomorrow night, we'll have the gathering and find out what we can that will help us. Then, the next morning, when it's over... He snatched the dragon's tooth up in his fist and held it up to her as the grin grew on his face. Then I call Scarlet with this.
That's how we get to Zed. That's how we can get to Adendril without the headache stopping me on a long journey by land. Scarlet flies with magic. Her magic allows her to cover vast distances in little time. We'll be gone before the sisters can stop us, and it will take them a long time to follow. I won't have to turn them down for now. I can get to Zed first. He will know what to do. About the headaches, I mean. After the gathering, I'll call Scarlet. It will probably take her the better part of the day to reach us. He leaned toward her and gave her a quick kiss. While we're waiting, we'll be married. Her heart leapt.
Married?
Yes, married. All in the same day, day after tomorrow. We'll do it all and be away before the day is out.
Oh, Richard,
I would like that. But let's do it now. Call Scarlet now. We can be married in the morning when she gets here. I know the Mud People would do it quickly for us. We can get to Zed, and he will know what to do, and you won't have to risk a gathering.
He shook his head. We have to have the gathering. Shota said only I could close the veil, not Zed.
What if he doesn't have any idea what to do? He has said he doesn't know much about the underworld. No one does. No one knows about the world of the dead. But the ancestors' spirits do. I have to find out whatever I can to help. We can't waste time going to Zed only to find out he doesn't know what to do. I have to find out what I can first, then go to Zed. Shota said only I could close the veil. Maybe it's because I am the seeker. I have to do my job and find the answers. Even if they mean little to me, they might be significant to Zed. And then he might know what to do, know what I can do.
What if we beat Zed to Adendril? If we travel on Scarlet, she will get us there in a day. Zed may not be there yet.
If he isn't there, we know he's going there, and we'll find him. He will be able to see Scarlet. She watched him a moment.
Your mind is made up about all this, isn't it?
He shrugged. If anyone could poke holes in my idea, it would be you. You have any better ideas?
She shook her head at last. I wish I did, but I don't. I like all of it but the gathering.
Richard's face softened with a gentle smile. I would really like to see you in the wedding dress Wesleyan is making. Can she have it done that soon? We could spend our wedding night in Adendril in your home.
Kaelin couldn't keep the smile back. She can, and there doesn't have to be a big wedding party. Anyway, there's not time to prepare with the banquet for the gathering going on, but the Birdman will be pleased to marry us without it.
She looked at him coyly.
We could have a real bed in Adendril. A big, comfortable bed.
His arm circled around her waist and pulled her up against him. He gave her lips a soft kiss. She didn't want it to end, but she gently pushed back and glanced away.
Richard, what about the other things Shota said? About a child?
Shota was wrong before about a lot of things. Even the things she was right about didn't turn out how we expected. I'm not going to give you up on her word. Remember what you said to me one time? About never letting a beautiful woman pick your path for you when there was a man in her line of sight? And besides, we will be able to talk to Zed first. Confessors and the gift are something he does know a lot about. She ran her finger down his chest.
You seem to have an answer for everything. How did you get so smart?
He pulled her to him and kissed her again, harder this time. I will find an answer to anything that tries to keep me from you and your big, comfortable bed. I would go to the underworld and fight the Keeper himself to be with you. She cuddled against his shoulder. It seemed like forever since he had found her in Westland, being chased by a quad. It seemed a lifetime ago, not a mere few months. They had been through so much. She was so tired of being afraid and being chased, hunted. It wasn't fair that just when it was over, it was starting again. She gave herself a mental shake. That was the wrong way to see things. It was the problem, not the solution. She forced herself to look at the new problem in its own light and not color it with what had happened in the past.
Maybe it won't be so hard this time. Maybe we can do as you say and find out what needs to be done and be finished with it.
She kissed his neck. We'd better get out there. They are waiting. And besides, if I stay here with you any longer, we won't make it to my big, comfortable bed. They left the quiet of the spirit house and walked hand in hand through the dark pathways between the buildings of the village. She felt safe holding his hand. From the first day they met, and he offered his hand to help her up, she had liked having her hand in his. No one had ever done that before. People were afraid of confessors. She wanted this over, so they could be together and live in peace, so they could hold hands whenever they wanted, and not ever have to run. The sound of the people, the dancing, the conversation, and the children grew louder until the two of them passed into the firelit field. Musicians stood on open, grass-roofed platforms, swaying as they drew paddles up and down the carved ripples on the boldus, sending the haunting strains out over the surrounding flat grassland. Arms a blur, men pounded on drums, sending frantic, echoing beats across the village to others who answered or joined in. Dancers in costumes followed one another around in circles, stopping and turning as one, jumping and stomping, acting out stories for the gleeful children and adults who crowded around them. Cooking fires sent sweet-smelling smoke and wonderful aromas drifting to them. As they walked past, large fires roared and crackled in the center of the field, warming one side of her with their heat. Men proudly wore their finest skins, and women their brightest dresses. All had their hair freshly slicked down with sticky mud. Woven trays of tava bread, roasted peppers, onions, long beans, cabbage, cucumber, and beets, bowls of stewed meats, fish, and chicken, as well as platters of boar and venison, were carried by young women from the cook fires to people gathered at various shelters. The whole village was in joyful celebration to welcome the ancestors' spirits. Savinland stood at their approach, welcoming them onto the elders' platform. He looked dignified with his official coyote hide around his shoulder. The birdman and the other elders gave the two of them smiles and nods. As soon as she and Richard sat cross-legged, the young women brought woven trays and platters of food. They both took pieces of tava bread and rolled them around peppers, careful to put them into their mouths with the right hand only. A boy brought pottery mugs and a jug of water mildly flavored with spices. When he was satisfied, they were comfortably settled. The birdman nodded to a group of women at a nearby shelter. Kaelin knew what this meant. The women were special cooks, the only ones allowed to prepare the banquet specialties. Richard's eyes watched as one of them came with a woven platter filled with dried meat, neatly arranged in a circular pattern. He gave no sign of his feelings. There would be no gathering if he didn't eat this meat. Worse, this was not just any meat. She knew, though, that he was determined and would eat it. The woman bowed her head, holding the platter out to the birdman, and then the other elders. After each took some, she offered it to the elders' wives. A few took a piece. She turned and held the platter out to Richard. He looked at it a moment, and then reached up and took one of the larger pieces. He held it in his fingers, looking at it, as the woman left after Kaelin declined the offer. "I know it is difficult for you," the birdman said to Richard, "but it is necessary for you to have the knowledge of our enemies." Richard pulled off a big bite with his teeth. "The way is the way." He chewed and swallowed without showing any emotion. He looked off into the distance. "Who is it?" The birdman watched him a moment after Richard looked back to him. "It is the man you killed." "I see." He took another bite. He had taken a big piece and was eating the whole thing to show them his determination to have the gathering, to show them that despite the warning from the spirits, he was resolved to go through with it. He watched the dancers as he chewed, washing each swallow down with a drink from his mug. The elders' platform was an isolated island of quiet in the sweep of noise and activity. Richard abruptly stopped chewing. His eyes widened. He sat up straighter. His head snapped around to the elders. "Where's Chandelin?" They looked at one another after studying his face a moment. Richard sprang to his feet. "Where's Chandelin?" "He is here somewhere," the birdman said. "Find him, right now. Bring him here." The birdman sent one of the nearby hunters to search. Richard hopped down off the platform without a word and went to the shelter with the banquet cooks. He found the woman with the platter of meat and took a piece. Kaelin turned to the birdman. "Do you have any idea what is going on?" He nodded solemnly. He has had a vision from our enemy's flesh. It happens sometimes. That is why we do this, to know what is in our enemy's hearts. Richard returned and paced back and forth in front of the elder's platform, waiting.
Richard, what is it? What do you see?
He stopped pacing. The expression on his face was agitated. Trouble. He resumed his pacing. She asked what sort of trouble, but he didn't seem to even notice the question. At last the hunter returned with Chandelin and his men.
What would make Richard with the temper ask for me?
Richard shoved the piece of meat at him. Eat this. Tell me what you see. Chandelin watched Richard's eyes as he ate the strip of dried meat. Richard went back to his impatient pacing, pulling off another bite with his teeth. He chewed and paced. Finally, he could wait no longer.
Well, what do you see?
Chandelin watched warily. An enemy. Richard let out an exasperated breath.
Who was this man? From what people?
He was Bontoc, from the east. Kalin jumped up.
Bontoc?
She hopped down off the platform and stood next to Richard.
Bontoc are peaceful. They would never attack anyone. It is against their way.
He was a Bontoc,
Chandelin repeated. He had black painted on his eyes. He attacked us. He redirected his gaze to Richard. At least, that is what Richard with the temper claims. Richard went back to pacing.
They're coming, he muttered.
He stopped and grabbed Chandelin by the shoulders.
They're coming. They're coming to attack the Mud People.
Chandelin frowned. The Bontoc are not fighters. It is as the Mother Confessor says, they are peaceful. They plant crops, herd goats and sheep. We trade with them. This one that attacked us must have been sick in the head. The Bontoc know the Mud People are stronger than they. They would not attack us.
Richard hardly heard the translation.
Get your men together. Get more men. We have to stop them.
Chandelin studied him.
We have nothing to fear from the Bontoc. They would not attack us.
Richard nearly exploded.
Chandelin, you are charged with protecting our people. I am telling you there is a threat to them. You must not ignore me in this.
He ran his fingers through his hair, calming himself. Chandelin, don't you think it a little strange that one man would have attacked all of us? Would you, as brave as you are, have come into the open and attacked that many men by yourself? You with only a spear, and they with bows?
Chandelin only glared. The birdman led the elders off the platform and stood next to Chandelin, facing Richard.
Tell us what our enemy has revealed to you. Tell us what you have seen.
This man, Richard held the piece of meat up in front of the birdman's face, this man was the son of their spirit guide.
The elders broke into worried whispers. The birdman didn't move his eyes from Richard.
Are you sure of this? Killing the son of a spirit guide is a grave offense, even in self-defense. It would be the same if someone killed my offspring, had I one.
He lifted an eyebrow.
Grave enough to start a war?
Richard nodded hurriedly. I know. That's what they had planned. For some reason they thought the Mud People were suddenly dangerous to them. To be sure, they sent the son of their spirit guide, knowing that if we killed him, it would be a sign of our hostile intent. They were planning on watching for his head on a pole to see if they were right. If he didn't return and they found the head, they were going to attack.
He waved the meat in front of the elders' faces again.
This man, for some reason, had bitterness in his heart. He wanted there to be a war. He attacked us, knowing he would be killed, wanting it, so it would start the war and his people could kill all the Mud People. Don't you see? With the banquet going on, they will hear the sounds of it far out onto the plain. They will know we are not prepared to defend ourselves, that we are diverted. They are coming now.
The elders all leaned back a little. The birdman turned to Chandelin.
Richard with the temper has had a vision from our enemy. Have each of your men gather 10 others. We must not allow the Bontoc to harm our people. You will stop them before they reach the village.
Chandelin's eyes flashed to Richard and then back to the birdman.
We will see if his vision is true. I will lead our men east. If they are coming, we will stop them.
No,
Richard screamed when Kalin translated. They will come from the north.
North.
Chandelin glared at him.
The Bontoc live to the east, not the north. They will come from the east. They will expect you to defend to the east. They think that the Mud People want to kill them. They expect it. They will flank you and come from the north.
Chandelin folded his arms. The Bontoc are not fighters. They do not know of such tactics. If they are going to attack us, as you say, they will simply come straight in. As you said, they will hear the banquet. They will know we will be unprepared. They have no reason to go all the way around and come in from the north. It would only slow them down for no reason. Richard glared at him. They are coming from the north.
Was this part of your vision? The birdman asked. Did you see this, too, from eating the meat?
Richard forced out a breath and looked down. No, I didn't see it with the rest of the vision. He ran his fingers through his hair. But I know it's true. I don't know how, but I know. They are coming from the north.
The birdman turned to Chandelin. Perhaps you could split the men. Take some to the east and some to the north.
Chandelin shook his head. No. If the vision proves true, we will need all our men together. One strike with surprise, with all our men, and with luck, will end it. If there are enough of them, as he seems to think, then they might defeat a number that small. And then they would be upon our people before we could turn them back. Many women and children would be killed. The whole village could fall. It is too dangerous.
The birdman nodded. Chandelin, a vision has been presented to us. It is your job to keep our people safe. Since the vision did not say which way they would come, only that they would come, I leave it to you to protect us as you see best. You are the smartest fighter among us. I will trust your fighting judgment.
He frowned and leaned closer to the man. But know that it had better be a fighting judgment and not a personal one. Chandelin showed no emotion. It is my opinion the Bontoc would attack from the east. He glanced at Richard. If they really come.
Richard put a hand on Chandelin's folded arm. Chandelin, please listen to me.
His voice was quiet and worried. I know you don't like me. Maybe you are justified in your feelings. Maybe you are right that I have brought trouble to our people. But trouble is coming now, and it is coming from the north. Please, I beg you, believe me. The lives of all our people depend on this. Hate me all you want, but don't let any of them die because of that hate.
Richard drew the sword of truth and held out the hilt. I will give you my sword. Go north. If they come from the east and I am wrong, you may kill me with it.
Chandelin looked down at the sword and back up to Richard's face. A small smile spread on his own. I will not let you trick me. I will not let our people be devastated just for a chance to kill you. I would rather let you live among us than let my people be killed. I go to the east.
He turned and strode off, shouting instructions to his men.
Richard stood, watching him go, then slid the sword back into its scabbard.
That man is a fool, Kalin said.
Richard shook his head. He is just doing what he thinks best. He wants to protect his people more than he wants to kill me. If I had to pick one man to fight beside me, as much as he hates me, it would be him. I am the fool for not being able to make him see the truth.
He turned to her. I have to go north. I have to stop them.
Kalin looked around.
There are some other men here. We will gather all we can and...
He shook his head, cutting her off. No, that wouldn't be enough. Besides, we need every man able to hold a bow or spear here to defend the village if I fail. The elders must go on with the banquet. We must have the gathering. That is what's most important. I'll go alone. I am the seeker. Maybe I can stop them. Maybe they will listen to one man, see that he isn't so much of a threat.
All right. Wait here. I'll be right back.
Why?
I have to put on my confessor's dress.
You're not going.
I have to. You can't speak their language.
Kalin, I don't want...
Richard!
She snatched a fistful of his shirt.
I'm the mother confessor. There will be no war under my nose while I have a say in it. You will wait here.
She released his shirt and stormed off. The mother confessor didn't wait for answers to her instructions. She expected them to be carried out. She suddenly regretted yelling at Richard.
but she was furious at Chandelin for not listening. She was furious, too, at the Bontoc. She had been to their village before, and always found them to be a gentle people. Whatever their reasons, as long as she was around, there was going to be no war. The Mother Confessor was supposed to stop wars, not sit by and watch them start. This was her responsibility, her job, not Richard's. At Savinlin and Wesselin's home, in the dark, with all the noise going on outside, she slipped into her white confessor's dress. All confessors wore dresses cut the same, square at the neck, long, simple, free of embellishment, and satiny smooth, but of black fabric. Only the Mother Confessor's was white. It was a mantle of power. In the dress, she was not Cailin Amnell. She was the Mother Confessor, a symbol of the power of truth. With all the other confessors now dead, the weight of defending the Midlands, those without power, was upon her shoulders. It made her feel different now to wear the dress. Before, it had seemed the normal thing to do. Now, since she had met Richard, it seemed a heavier responsibility. Before, she had always felt alone in her job, but now, with him, she felt more of a connection to the people of the Midlands, more one of them, more responsible to them. She knew now what it was to love someone, and to fear for him. She was not going to allow anyone to start a war, not as long as she was the Mother Confessor. She grabbed their heavy cloaks and went back through the passageways to the festivities. The elders were standing in front of their platform, where she had left them. Richard was still waiting. She tossed his cloak to him and addressed the elders. "Tomorrow night is the gathering. It must go on. We will be back well before then." She turned to the wives. "Wesselin, we wish to be married the next day. I'm sorry there isn't more time to prepare, but we must leave as soon as it is done. We must go to Adendrill. We must stop the threat to the Mud People and everyone else." Wesselin smiled. "Your dress will be ready. I wish we could give you a big wedding feast, but we understand." The Birdman put a hand on her shoulder. "If Chandelin is wrong, be careful. The Bontoc are peaceful, but maybe things have changed. Tell them we wish their people no harm. We do not want war with them." Cailin nodded and flung her cloak around her shoulders as she started off. "Let's go." Chapter 15. Richard fell in beside her without objection. Without speaking, they left the village and went north out onto the flat, open grasslands. As they walked, the sounds of the people and bulldozers and drums faded steadily into the night. The moon wasn't near full, but it gave them enough light to see by as they walked through the waist-high dry grass. They hoped that it was dark enough to make them poor targets. Richard finally glanced over. "Cailin, I'm sorry."
"For what?"
"For forgetting who you are, that you are the Mother Confessor, and that this is your job. I was just worried for you." She was surprised by his apology. "I'm sorry I yelled at you. I shouldn't have done that. I just don't want there to be any fighting. I'm supposed to keep the people of the Midlands from fighting. It makes me angry when they insist on killing one another. Richard, I'm so tired of seeing people killed. I thought it was over. I can't bear it anymore. I swear I can't." He put an arm around her. "I know. Me too." He gave her shoulder a squeeze as they walked. "The Mother Confessor will put a stop to it." He looked over. She thought he was frowning, but it was too dark to be sure. "With my help." She grinned.
"With your help."
She leaned her head against him a moment.
"From now on, always with your help."
They walked a long way from the village without seeing anything but the black ground and starlit sky. Richard would stop once in a while to watch the surrounding grassland and take out a few of Nissel's leaves to chew. Sometime past the middle of the night, they came to a slight depression in the landscape. He looked around again and then decided they should wait where they were. It would be better for the Bontoc to come upon them, he said, than for the two of them to walk into a surprise. Richard flattened out a small patch of grass, and they sat down to wait. They each took turns taking little naps while the other watched to the north. With her hand over his, she watched him sleep and scanned the horizon, and thought about all the times they had done this before. one standing watch, the other sleeping. She longed for the day they could just sleep and not have to watch. Sleep together. It would happen, she decided, soon enough. Richard would figure out how to close the veil, and then it would be over. They could be at peace. Kaylin slept nuzzled against him with her cloak wrapped tight against the cold. His warmth made her all the more sleepy. She began to wonder if he was right, if the Bontoc would come from the north. If they came from the east, there would be a lot of killing. Chandelin would show no mercy. She didn't want the Mud People to be hurt, but she didn't want the Bontoc hurt either. They too were her people. She drifted into worried sleep, her last thoughts of Richard. He brought her awake, pressing his arm around her and his hand over her mouth. The sky was just beginning to lighten to their right, to the east. Thin wisps of dark purple clouds bunched near the horizon, as if trying to mask the sunrise with their dark hue. Richard was watching to the north. She was lower than he and couldn't see anything, but she knew by the tenseness of his muscles that someone was coming. They lay still, close to the ground, waiting. Gentle breezes rustled the dry grass around them. Kaylin quietly, slowly slid the cloak from her shoulders. She didn't want there to be any mistake about who she was. The Bontoc would recognize her long hair, but she wanted them to see her confessor's dress, too. She didn't want there to be any doubt who she was and that she was here as the Mother Confessor. Richard shrugged his cloak off his shoulders. Shadows slid through the grass around them. When there seemed to be men all around, the two of them stood up. Men with spears and bows closest leapt back and screamed yells of surprise. The Bontoc were spread out in a long, thin line advancing toward the Mud People's village. There were excited shouts. Men swept in from the line, a few surrounding them, most bunched in front. Kaylin stood tall, her hands at her sides. She wore her confessor's face, a calm that showed nothing as her mother had taught her. Richard was tight at her side, his hand on the hilt of his sword. Most of the men in simple hide clothes, trimmed with grass, leveled weapons at the two of them. They were clearly nervous about doing so. "You would dare to threaten the Mother Confessor?" she called out. "Lower your weapons. Now." Eyes flicked around, looking to see if the two of them were alone. The men seemed to become less sure about pointing spears and arrows at the Mother Confessor. They were doing something unheard of, and they knew it. They looked as if they couldn't decide to keep doing what they were doing or drop their weapons and fall to their knees. A few of them crouched lower, in half bows. Kaylin took an aggressive stride toward them. "Now!" The men flinched, cowering back a little. The points of all the weapons moved from her to Richard. They appeared to hope this would be an acceptable compromise. It was not what she had expected. She stepped in front of Richard. All the weapons were once again pointing at her. "What do you think you are doing?" he whispered to the back of her head. "Just stay quiet. Let me try to do this. We don't have a chance if we can't get them to lower their weapons and talk." "Why are they doing this? I thought everyone was afraid of the Mother Confessor." "They are afraid, but they are used to seeing a wizard with me. They may be more bold because they don't see one now. Even so, they shouldn't be doing this." She took another step forward. "Who speaks for the Bontoc? Who among you takes responsibility for allowing the Bontoc to threaten the Mother Confessor?" Not being able to point their weapons at Richard with her in the way, the Bontoc lost a bit of their confidence and lowered the points a little. Not all the way, but a little. At last, an old man approached, pushing through, stopping in front of her. He wore simple hide clothes, like the other men, but around his neck hung a gold medallion worked with Bontoc symbols. She knew him. He was Ma Bon Grid, the Bontoc spirit guide. His scowl made his heavily wrinkled, loose skin seem even more deeply creased than she remembered. She also didn't remember him scowling like this. She remembered only his easy smile.
"I speak for the Bontoc," Ma Bon Grid said.
He had only two bottom teeth in front. His jaw wobbled easily. With the difficult-to-pronounce Bontoc words, he glanced at Richard.
"Who is this one?"
Kalin returned Ma Bongrid's scowl. "Now Ma Bongrid would question the Mother Confessor before she is welcomed before his eyes?" The Bontoc men shuffled their feet uneasily. Ma Bongrid did not. His gaze was solid and unwavering.
"These are not right times. These are not our lands. We are not here to welcome visitors before the eyes of the Bontoc. We have come to kill the Mud People."
"Why?" Ma Bongrid peered down his nose at her.
"They have invited war, as our spirit brethren have warned us they would. They have proven it by killing one of mine. We must kill them before they can kill us all."
"There will be no war. There will be no killing. I am the Mother Confessor, and I will not allow it. The Bontoc will suffer by my hand if they do this." The band of men broke into worried whispers and moved back a pace. The spirit guide stood his ground.
"The spirit brethren have also told me that the Mother Confessor no longer holds command over the people of the Midlands. They say that as proof she has been stripped of the company of a wizard."
He gave her a smug look.
"I see no wizard. As always, the spirits speak true to Ma Bongrid."
Kalin stared speechless at the old man. Richard leaned toward her. "What are they saying?" Kalin told him what Ma Bongrid had said. He stepped up next to her. "I want to speak to them. Translate for me." Kalin nodded. "They wanted to know who you are. I didn't tell them." Richard's eyes turned cold with menace. "I will let them know who I am." His voice took on the same cold quality as his eyes, and they aren't going to like it. He turned his hawk-like glare on the men, deliberately ignoring Ma Bongrid. And she saw in those eyes the rage of the sword's magic. He was calling the magic forth, even as the sword sat in its scabbard. "You men are following an old fool by the name of Ma Bongrid, who is not wise enough to know true spirits from false spirits." The men gasped at the insult. Richard turned his penetrating gaze to Ma Bongrid. "Is this not true, old fool?" Ma Bongrid stammered with anger a moment before he could get any words out.
"Who are you to dare to insult me like this?"
Richard glared at him. "Your false spirits told you the Mud People killed one of yours. The false spirits lied to you, and you, in your foolishness, believed them."
"Lie? We found his head. The Mud People killed him. They want war with us. We will kill them all, every last one. They have killed one of mine."
"I am growing tired of talking to one as stupid as you, old man. The Bontoc are a witless people if they put one such as you in charge of talking to the spirit brethren."
"Richard, what are you doing?"
she whispered. "Translate." When she did, Ma Bongrid's face reddened more with each word. He looked ready to burst into flames. Richard leaned closer to him.
"The Mud People didn't kill the one that was yours. I did."
"Richard, I can't tell them that. They will kill us."
He continued to glare at Ma Bongrid as he spoke softly to her. "Something is frightening these people into doing this. They are going to kill us and then go and kill a lot of the Mud People unless I can make them even more frightened of us. Translate." She let out a noisy breath at him and then told the Bontoc what Richard had said. The weapons came back up.
"You! You killed one of mine!"
Richard shrugged.
"Yes."
He pointed at his forehead. "I put an arrow right here. One arrow right here. Right through his head as he was about to put his spear in the back of a man who had no hate in his heart for the Bontoc. I killed him as I would kill a coyote sneaking up to steal one of my lambs. One who would take a life by such cowardice deserves to die. One who would listen to false spirits and send one of his own to do such a thing does not deserve to lead a people."
"We will kill you."
"Really? Maybe you will try. But you cannot kill me."
Richard turned his back to the old man and walked about 20 paces away, the men opening up to let him pass. He turned back. I used one arrow to kill one of yours. Use one arrow to try to kill me, and we will see who the good spirits protect. Pick any man you wish. Have him do to me as I did to yours. Shoot me with an arrow. He pointed angrily at his forehead again. Right here, where I shot the coward who would kill for false spirits.
Richard, have you lost your mind? I'm not going to tell them to shoot you.
Kaelin, I can do this. I can feel it.
You did it once. What if it doesn't work this time? I'm not going to stand here and let you be killed.
Kaelin, if we don't stop these people here, now, both of us are going to be killed, and then the Keeper is going to escape. Tonight is the gathering. That is what's important. I'm using the wizard's first rule. The first step to believing is wanting to believe something is true, or being afraid it is. Up until now, they have been believing something because they wanted to. I have to make them afraid that what I am going to say is true.
What are you going to say? Hurry up. Translate before I lose their interest and they decide to kill us and then go after the mud people.
She turned back to Mabon Grid and reluctantly translated. The men all started shouting that they wanted to be the one to shoot the arrow. Mabon Grid's eyes moved among them as they yelled and waved their arms. He smiled.
All you men may shoot this evil one who has killed one of mine. Everyone, shoot him!
The bows came up. Richard glared.
Coward! Do you men see how foolish this old man is? He knows he listens to false spirits. He would have you listen to them also. He knows the good spirits protect me in my challenge. He is afraid to have you see he is a fool. This proves it!
Mabon Grid's jaw tightened. He held his arm up for his men to halt. At last he turned to a man with a bow and snatched it from his hand.
I will show you the spirits I hear are true. You will die for killing one of mine, for saying our spirit brethren are false spirits.
He drew a poison arrow back and in a blink shot it at Richard. A cheer rose from the men. Kaelin's breath caught in her throat. She went cold with fear. Richard snatched the arrow out of the air right in front of his face. The men gasped and then fell silent as Richard marched back to the spirit guide, the arrow in his hand and fire in his eyes. He stopped before Mabon Grid and snapped the arrow in front of his face to the sound of fearful murmurs. His voice was deadly.
The good spirits protect me, old fool. You listen to false spirits. Who are you?
Mabon Grid whispered, wide-eyed. Richard slowly drew the Sword of Truth. The soft ring of steel filled the quiet dawn. He placed the sword's point at Mabon Grid's throat.
I am Richard, the Seeker, mate to the Mother